Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from wonderfully sunny and gorgeous Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a fantastic show lined up for you guys today, one that Linda and I have been looking forward to for weeks now. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholz, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in live this week from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. And may I say that I'm so glad it's sunny here because I have had to walk out of my house away from my computer 6 times in the last 2 days to get away from technology, which I find is hilarious. Knowing that we're going to have Amy with us today, we're going to be talking about things that are so tech-dependent, I've been wanting to throw a tantrum about technology.
Oh, my goodness.
It's times like this where I'm so glad I have a koi pond out back, and I just go and I put my feet in the pond, and I throw food at the fish, and I let the fish nibble on my toes, and remember, there's a whole other world.
Wow. How
nice. So, in the meantime, now that I'm back in a Zen state, Amy Porterfield, I am so glad to have you with us on the show today. For folks who may not know Amy, she's the co-author of the Facebook Marketing All-in-One book for Dummies and the creator and host of a very popular podcast, Online Marketing Made Easy. And I encourage everyone, go find and follow that podcast. And Amy has worked with mega brands like Harley Davidson Motorcycles and Peak Performance and Tony Robbins. And in particular with Tony, she for 6 years oversaw his content development team and collaborated on multiple online marketing campaigns. And she currently creates online programs to teach entrepreneurs and small businesses across industries how to leverage social media specifically so that you can gain greater exposure, attract quality leads, and then turn your fans and followers into loyal customers. So, Amy, I'm so delighted to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So,
hello,
I've been waiting.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
I've been waiting weeks to say Harley Davidson. So, how did you get into Harley Davidson? What was that?
I know, so bizarre. And sometimes people introduce me and say she was a biker chick. And I always say I was not a biker chick by any means. But I grew up in a blue-collar family.
I'll admit to it,
were?
Amy. I
was very much a biker chick
for about 6 years.
Well, look at that. I would admit to it, but it would be a big, fat lie. So I definitely have a lot of respect for those that are, though, because it's a really, really cool thing to do. So my dad was a big Harley guy, and I loved the whole nostalgia around it, and there was so much history and Harley Davidson and all that good stuff, and it was just a lot of fun. So my first job out of college in marketing was with Harley Davidson at the dealership levels, where I would market for product and events. So it was a really cool place to start out my marketing career because the audience or the fans or customers would tattoo the brand's logo on their arm. I mean, who else gets to say that? So it was a really cool fan base.
You know, you brought up a really interesting point because I worked for one of the Disney business units, and one of the jokes that we all had was, be careful where you draw that because they're going to come after you and say, do you have a license to draw Mickey Mouse there? So I don't think there's all that many people wandering around with Disney-themed tattoos.
So
whereas
true.
Harley Davidson saying, please, add a tattoo.
Yes.
Too funny. And so I think it must have been a blast to work with an organization whose customers were absolutely raving loyal fans.
Yes. You know, it was such a great place to start because you could see how storytelling, Harley Davidson was really big into storytelling and spotlighting their customers. So you could see how that really played a part in people being really loyal to the brand. And, you know, if someone, usually if you have a Harley, you would never, ever go anywhere else. And so they were able to foster that through their different rides they would do and their events and, again, the stories and the merchandise. So it was truly an exciting place to learn how to market.
I love what you were just sharing because it points out, you know, I work with so many entrepreneurial businesses where they start with a passion and then they're trying to find out who also would really like, enjoy, or want this. So it must have been very cool to work in a company where that entire core of relationship was already in place, and what you got to do is play in that pond or in that sandbox looking for how do we please customers who already love who we are and what we're about.
Yes, exactly. So very true.
Very cool. Very cool. So what took you from Harley Davidson and raving fans to peak performance?
You know, I hate to admit this, but it's the truth, so I always have to come out and say it. At the time when I was working at Harley, I had gone through a really bad breakup, and it was drama, and I was young, and I liked this guy a lot, and it didn't work out. So at night, I could not sleep. I went through about a month of just insomnia, I guess, and I was up every night watching TV, and I ran across Tony Robbins' infomercial. So it was on every night. Now, when I started working for Tony, I realized that I guess it's any minute of the day his infomercial can be found on some channel. Little did I know.
I think it's true.
Yeah, I couldn't get away from it. And so I basically watched the infomercial, thought, I got to check this guy out. This is interesting. I was at a time in my life that I wanted a little inspiration. And so I went to the library, checked out his audio tapes, and loved them instantly. So I ended up signing up, going to an event. That's a little bit my personality is when I love something and I find it fascinating in one way or the other, I got to go check it out. And then usually I say, I want to work for this company. It happened with Harley and it happened with Tony. So I ended up landing a really amazing position as director of content development for the company, and I got to travel the world with Tony for over 6 years, and my team would develop the content that Tony would come up with. So he'd come up with these big ideas, and we'd make them more tangible in audio programs, in manuals, live events, videos, wherever we might put that content. So talk about an amazing experience. That definitely was.
And at that point, were you coming up with new and novel approaches for getting Tony known or getting the programs recognized? Or what was the strategic approach you were taking at that point?
At that point, what we were doing is we were definitely doing a lot more online marketing, which was exciting because my last few years with working with Tony, I got to be in the marketing department, specifically online marketing and online launches of programs, products, and services. So really at that time, the way we were working to get him more exposure, newer audiences, and just getting the word out there was through, we started with social media. I helped build his Facebook page. He went crazy with Twitter. Twitter definitely was an area that he took over and loved the ability to connect with people on a really intimate level. And then we started to work with some online marketers, big shot online marketers, who taught us how to take our programs, products, services online and create launches around them to get people excited for specific programs. So I got to be a part of all of that, and it really took the business to the next level.
And in a sense, you were really at the forefront of doing it, and you had the engine of the business and the profits and the economics of that all able to fund it and staff it, but there was the innovative side of, what would happen if we go play with this new technology path and so on.
Yes, that's what was so exciting about it. There's definitely the infrastructure was there and we had the resources we needed, and now we got to be creative and try new things. And the idea of, you know, Tony jumping on Twitter to promote a live event was completely new to us. We didn't know what to expect. And also the email marketing at a different level. And, you know, at the time, launches were very specific where, I don't know if you know this name, but Jeff Walker invented a launch style online where you release a video, and then another free video, and then another free video. And after they've watched these three videos and they've really created a relationship with you as you train people through these free videos, you then tell them about your product or service. So this was very brand new to us, but allowed us to sell at a different level that we never had the opportunity to do so. So it was definitely a time where we were trying new things and experimenting.
And I assume that in each of those videos, Tony was the voice and the face that was doing the presenting. So it was his persona, his presence taken into a different medium to get into people who might not be up late at night and so on.
Exactly. Definitely. The greatest thing about working with Tony Robbins is he had hands in everything, and he was very much involved. So when I say I was the director of content development, Tony came up with the big ideas. These were his strategies, things that he had been perfecting for years and years and years. I got to then, get my hands dirty and play with the content and really make it something for different venues and media and all that good stuff. But yes, he was very much involved, the face of the company, the brand, still very much is.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, as you're describing all of this, I have about 10 more questions I want to ask. And let's talk about the shift you made from Tony into working independently, because that's a change of a business model for you, from employee to entrepreneur.
So very true. It's interesting how it all happened. So when I was working with Tony Robbins, I was invited to go to a meeting and sit around the table with a bunch of strangers. I had no idea who these guys were. Most of them were in T-shirts and jeans and really casual, and they started talking about what they do in their business. Well, little did I know that these were the big giants of internet marketing. And they talked about creating online programs, and they talked about social media, and they talked about their lifestyle and how they had time to, go watch the play with their kids at school and take vacations and call the shots. And we had this meeting because we wanted Tony to hear about different opportunities that he could bring into the business through online marketing. But I sat there and thought, it is time. I need to do something bigger on my own, because I had been listening to Tony for 6 years talk about entrepreneurship and the idea of creating your own freedom and designing your life. And although I love my job with Tony, I was working for the man. So it was very different than creating your own life and lifestyle. So about 6 months after that meeting, I started to put wheels in motion. And about 6 months after that, I left the company to start my own online consulting business, all about online marketing and social media. I was terrified, but I knew it was time to take that leap.
Cool. Cool, cool, cool. So now, who were your first clients when you took that leap?
One of my first clients was Mike Stelzner of Social Media Examiner. And at the time when I was still working with Tony, we had hired Mike to write a white paper. So it was like this report that Mike was writing, and I got to work one-on-one with Mike. And I told him, I plan to make my big shift in a few months. And he said, well, when you do, give me a call. I'm starting this brand new website called socialmediaexaminer.com. It hadn't even been created yet, but things were in motion. So when I left, I gave him a call, and he hired me to help him create the Facebook page to launch his website. Well, that Facebook page went from 0 to 30,000 fans in that first year, and I became the community manager for about a year of that page. But now it's well over 100,000, if not 2,000, I think it could be at now, and it's extremely lucrative for Mike. He uses his Facebook page to fill up his online and offline events and has done such a great job of building the community there. So it was an exciting time to jump right into it.
You know, as you're describing that, I think one of the things that would be really great for the folks who are listening is to understand the evolution of all this, because in a sense you were there at the birth of these different forms of social media, and you got to play with them. You know, when you were with Tony, you got to play with different ones and try and experiment. And then with Mike, you got to apply it and say, look, here's all these things that I think will work, they ought to work, and so on. And in a sense, what you were doing with him was it was a marketing case study of trying different platforms to see where his rabid fans and followers might be and figure out how to connect with them?
Yes, definitely. It was a great time to find new audiences, people that had never even experienced anything about Tony Robbins, especially a younger audience. You know, social media now is growing through all ages, but at the time, there was a bigger handful of that younger audience using the technologies and the networks. So we were able to appeal to a new audience, which was really important to the brand as well.
And I guess that means there was a sort of simplicity at that moment because you knew in general you had a younger audience and so on, so you're trying to speak to them. And now what it's evolved into is it truly is across many decades of ages and demographics. And it's a whole different exercise nowadays to try and figure out who's there, why they're there, what they are interested in and looking for and so on. It's got
yes,
more
complex definitely.
Now.
It's so one of my favorite things about social media in general is that it is such an amazing way to do marketing for free. And so we were able to really pay attention to what people were asking about on our new Facebook page, what they were talking to Tony about, what resonated with them the most. I mean, just studying Tony's stream of comments from people on Twitter gave us a wealth of knowledge as to where we wanted to go next, what was going to work, what wasn't going to work. So the intel you can get from social media astounds me to this day.
Yeah, I came out of I was an internal consultant at one of the Disney business units, and part of what I was involved in was a constant stream of research into the psychographics and demographics of the day to try and help theme park designers figure out what were trends that might be relevant as they were thinking about what to propose to go into the theme parks and so on. And what's so funny is that I think about that now and I think the mega thousands that were spent to get statistical answers are things you can find online in about a 5-minute search now.
Yes. Isn't that incredible?
It's amazing. It's an amazing resource. But and yet what also happens is that everybody starts to have to think in part like not just a technical specialist in their own area of business or their own pursuits or hobbies or interests, also like a marketing researcher. They have to learn, each of us, I shouldn't say they, we each, have to start thinking with the questions in mind, not merely looking for someone to toss a statistic in front of us and say, you know, we did all this background research and you should know X.
Right. Definitely. I would agree with that. It just feels like such a different world now than literally just a few years ago how we would do research or collect information.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. So coming forward from Mike, you know, so you started with Mike in this era when it was all new, and now here we are X number of years later with the sheer velocity of all these different platforms that are, you know, some are the old timers now. Facebook's an old timer now. How do you keep up with what are the new trends, what's launching, what's coming, and how to create a context of it for your clients?
You know, you're so right. Things change so quickly, and it's incredible how I'll wake up one morning and the platform, let's say Facebook in general, would dramatically change it sometimes. And so basically what I do is, first, I always teach my clients to find one social media platform that is your core hub, your core social hub, meaning it's the platform that you know your audience spends the most time on, they're active there, and it's the platform that you feel comfortable communicating on as well. So there has to be a good mix of you enjoy using it and your audience is spending time there. So once you have your core platform, then you use the other platforms like Google+, or let's say Facebook's my core platform, Google+, Twitter, YouTube, they're my secondary platforms. And I say that now because things change so much and you can't keep up with everything. You can't be an expert in all social media platforms. It's funny, it's hard for me to ever say I'm an expert with anything social media related because it changes all the time. So what I do is I keep my pulse number one on Facebook, not just because I teach Facebook, but because I know my audience is spending the most time there. So I'm constantly, you know, making sure I'm reading the most current articles about Facebook marketing and checking the Facebook marketing blog and making sure I know what's changed and what is working and what's not working in terms of strategy. And then I also keep a pulse on the other social sites, but not as much as I do on Facebook. Again, I don't think you can be everything to everyone, and you can't be an expert across the board. So find your core social hub and be really, really consistent there. And then use the others as social hub. I think it takes away some of that stress and overwhelm as well.
We have
How
a lot
do you
of...
decide? Sorry, Linda, can I jump in for a minute?
Totally.
How do you decide which of the many social sites you should make your hub?
Great question. So one of the things I do is I tell my students to, first, they've got to pay attention and start listening a little bit more to their audience. So everyone tends to have a Facebook profile, at least, or Facebook page now. So when you get clear about who your ideal audience is, not talking on social networks, just in general, you have a product, program, service. Now you need to be really clear about who your ideal audience is. And once you know that, then you want to start to talk to people who you think would fall into that ideal audience. And you've got to ask them, where are they spending their time? Which other Facebook pages do they enjoy visiting? Where do they use Twitter? Do they use Google+? Just these little conversations starting out will help you at least create a path to then do further research. If you do have a Facebook page, I always say ask people. Ask people where they're spending their time. Ask them what their favorite Facebook pages are, because that will shed light into what other interests they have. So listening and asking really will help you figure out where your audience is spending time.
Awesome. Go ahead, Linda.
No, it's really important, this issue, because Amy, you probably have language for it, but while I love quotes and I like to put quotes out there, there are a few people who I'm connected to who decide on a given day to put out 15 quotes. Like, you know, what else are you doing
right.
in life besides putting out quotes all day? You know, so I love what you said about, you know, find your ideal audience and then be connecting and relationship building with them. It's a filtering exercise. You may be on a particular social media site, but it's our responsibility to figure out how to filter out, even there, what is the noise in order to sort out how to build the relationships with the people we actually want to be in relationships with.
Yes, definitely. And I think that comes back to content creation. Knowing what content your audience wants to hear is so very important. One of the most important pieces you can have with this whole social media networking in general. What I tend to do is once I finally understood my audience, who they are and what they want to know, and really it was the questions they were asking me which helped me to figure out what most interested them, I created a list of 10 topics that at any time I could pull from these topics and talk about on any social site, and I knew it would grab the attention of my ideal audience and offer value. Like, how do you get more Facebook fans? How do you use Facebook ads? Should you add a like box to your website? Like, these are questions that come up all the time. Also, because I started listening, and this happens over, you know, a year's time, you got to put in your time, I knew other topics that interest them. Like, Pinterest is a big topic for my audience, even though I don't teach Pinterest. So I was able to bring in some Pinterest experts to help with that. So listening and then creating this list is really helpful, so you're never thinking, I don't know what to post today. Those different lists can really help.
You just mentioned Pinterest. So there are a number. Well, just let's use that as an example. So, you know, the average entrepreneur who's out there, it doesn't matter whether they're a professional wanting to be found by their ideal target, or they're a manufacturer of some product, or a craftsman, or someone who is a technical expert. They are searching, trying to understand these various platforms, and Pinterest comes along. And they think to themselves, well, but Pinterest is about pictures, and so is Instagram, and so is Flickr. How do they start to discern what's worth spending their time on and what is not, or what is worth setting aside for a few months until something changes on the landscape.
Right. I really think it comes down to a little bit, part of it has to do with your time and your ability to focus on different platforms. Because as you know, we're all running businesses, and there's only so much time we have in the day to focus on different areas, especially when it comes to social media. Social media doesn't necessarily have an instant return on investment. So it's difficult for a lot of small businesses and entrepreneurs to say, okay, I'm going to spend 10 hours a day working on this, and I don't think they should. So when it comes to Pinterest and Instagram and all the other kind of image sites, I really still believe that you got to come down to choosing one. Choose one as, you know, if you think images are a big part of your brand and they're going to play a big piece in your marketing, you got to choose one as your core platform. Now, here's what I say about that. Pinterest is definitely the leader in any social network that's about images. So really, if you have limited resources, start with the best. Go right to Pinterest. You know, learn just enough to be lethal with it, and maybe learn one or two strategies that are going to work for you, and then you've got to discipline yourself to, at this time, ignore the rest, because there's only a certain amount of hours in the day. So really, I teach a lot of pull back a little. You can't do it all, so get really good and strategic at a few strategies, and then at this time, ignore the rest till you have an opening to kind of take on something new.
Are there trends in how people use their time or the infrastructure that they use nowadays? I mean, with Tony Robbins, I'll just keep coming back to that example. There was someone who could fund a marketing team that would pay attention to these issues. He'd be the voice on Twitter. He'd use himself, his presence in the videos and so on. And there's different approaches, aren't there, for when someone is using their own voice, where someone might have a team where the team is speaking in the voice of the entrepreneur and so on?
I'm so sorry. I don't know if I understand your question.
So, you know, at what point, if you're trying to, how shall I put this? If you're trying to create the marketing momentum for your business, and yet you've got other parts of your business you have to pay attention to, where and when do you bring in other hands, other skill sets to start taking on the role of communicating or crafting the communications that are going to be used for that relationship building?
Such a great question. So with that, really, it depends on your business. Now, if you are, let's say, a solopreneur, so you are your own personal brand like I am, amyporterfield.com is my website, it's my name, it's my brand. And so with that, you've got to be really careful about giving any communication responsibilities to somebody else. However, there's a lot of things, especially in social media, that you can leverage or delegate to other people so that you're not doing all the work. And the point at which you figure out this is needed is when you know there comes a time you can't get to it all. And for me, it came to the point of I was really struggling to post regularly on all my social sites, as well as keep up with all the questions I was getting and making sure I was engaging. So I don't give my voice away to anybody on my team. However, I do enlist my team to help find great articles to post about, pull in great images. So I have content curators on my team to help me pull it all together. But when it comes down to the voice of my brand, I'm really diligent that that's me, and I hold on to that pretty tight. I think it's really important, especially with today's technology and how social network is going, to make sure that your voice is truly your own. But in addition to that, if you're not your own brand, if you have a business, like let's say you have a company name and there's employees, even if it's a small business, what I love to do is enlist your employees to be ambassadors for you on social brands. You know, Zappos is a great example where all the people at Zappos have their own Twitter accounts. They get to talk about anything personal, but they also identify with the brand and talk about Zappos, and they're really open and transparent about it. And Social Media Examiner does a good job of this as well. If you go to their Facebook page, you'll notice that they have a tab that shows you who posts on their Facebook page, like who on their team is part of that Facebook community. And then they sign off on each post using their name. So you'll know if it's Mike or Cindy or Andrea or Deb, whoever it might be, you'll know that they're posting. And so enlisting your team allows you to free up some time so you're not doing it all. And I think that's one of the best ways to do it.
Amy, know Simon Mainwaring, the number one best-selling author of We First?
I do, yes.
Simon just wrote a great article on this specific topic, and it's basically 10 things to keep in mind when enlisting your team's help to build your brand and tell the story of the good that your company does in the world using social media. If you go to simonmainwaring.com, you'll find the article. It was in the last 2 weeks. It was a really good article.
Great. I'll have to check that out for sure.
And I love what you just shared about curation, because I think so few business owners understand that you can, in fact, be a mediator between information that's relevant for your clients and your customers. And you don't have to be a genius every morning when you fall out of bed trying to find something specific, unique, and original that you have to say about everything, but rather that you can be the station master for getting them really, really excellent ideas for their business, because you are being that lens for them, and that lets you have a team, in fact, that's helping you be that lens. So thank you so much for that.
Yes, definitely. I appreciate you saying that.
I take it from your comments, Amy, that like me, you are a giant fan of curation.
I am. You know, even to the point that I have someone on my team that she's the content manager, and she not only helps me curate great content on a regular basis, she helps me I do a lot of live speaking, so she helps me take my presentations and turn them into slide shares, or she helps me take a presentation and turn those presentations into 2 blog posts and helps me outline a podcast. So,
oh, that's awesome.
We do a lot of repurposing as well. I didn't, you know, this is a big mistake in my early days. I didn't do this, and there's so much content that was a blog post, and then that's all it was. And I feel like today there's so many different ways people like to learn that you have a lot of different opportunities out there.
Well, and one thing that most people don't realize is that if you really want to get higher search engine rankings, Google sees that there is a really big problem in the world. There is so much content on any given topic that it's humanly impossible for anyone to ever get through all of it. So if all you're constantly doing is going out and creating new content, you're really, in the eyes of Google, proliferating the problem. On the other hand, Google also really knows that every person has a different learning style. Some want to read, some want to watch, some want to listen, some want to look at a pretty picture, some want to look at a slideshow. If you can simply go out and find that content that is very credible, that supports what it is you do, it can help you to really boost the credibility for your message in a way that writing your own content can't. And if you simply repurpose that content into multiple creative formats, you actually outrank your own original content in search every single time.
Such a great point. I love that. I never really looked at it like that, and you're so right, definitely.
It's a big part of what I teach my students to do, because you can't really write content that gets the credibility from scratch. But let's say there's a great article on a site that Helen Kilstein owns, and it was an article about how meditation techniques can be more powerful than morphine for pain relief. He simply curates an article from the Journal of American Medicine that says exactly that, that meditation techniques are more powerful than morphine for relieving pain. And at the end, he has a little outro and adds value to it and says, if you want to learn those meditation techniques that can help you, just subscribe for this free report right now. Well, he could have talked all day long about it and not had the same credibility of having this JAMA article to say the same thing getting people to opt in for his report at the end. I mean, it was just really brilliantly done.
Very cool. I love that idea. I love that strategy in general.
Go ahead, Linda. I keep stepping on you.
No, no.
I'll go back to mute.
It's the joy of three-way conversations. Which, again, actually comes back to this notion of social media. Because if we just look at Facebook right now, Facebook keeps trying to trigger three-way conversations. You know, that Amy, you and I could be talking back and forth, and because we get to have other observers who are watching us, they get to then join in, add their comments, decide to share it with their group, and it creates the domino effect into streams of people we might not have a direct connection with.
Right, which is pretty much the reason I love Facebook so much. I always tell people that I work with that those one-on-one conversations you're having on Facebook are so very valuable, because the way Facebook works, if you have conversations one-on-one with people, let's say you're communicating from your Facebook page to somebody else, well, then Facebook pays attention and they make sure that next time you post on your Facebook page, that person you're communicating with is going to see your post in their newsfeed. And since so many people spend time in the newsfeed more than anything else, it's crucial that you get out there. But I always say those one-on-one conversations you're having, so many people are looking in and they're just listening and they're getting value from it, or they're seeing your personality in it, or you're becoming their authority in some type of niche that you're talking about. So I think it's so valuable. One-on-one conversations are very public on Facebook, and that's a great thing.
So I actually, since I have you as my captive audience at the moment, or my captive resource, I have to dive in deep on a couple of issues with Facebook, because I know I cannot be the only person who is trying to sort out which voice to have on different platforms. So for instance, because I work with entrepreneurs and small business owners, when I started working on, figuring out my voice on LinkedIn and Facebook and Google+, there I had a different fit on those different platforms. And the irony was, because Facebook's been around in some ways the longest, I had the most connections there. And comes the day when I get messages from people on Facebook saying, why are you sending me notices about the radio show? As someone who's on Facebook, there's these different ways to filter who sees what, but it gets more and more complicated until I can't be the only person who just throws their hands up in the air and says, look, I give up. I'm just putting it out there. If you don't want to follow it, I welcome your unliking me because there's only so much I know how to control and yet stay in touch with the people I want to be in touch with.
Now,
so
were you sending these out via
your profile? What's a poor soul to do nowadays?
Were you sending these out via your profile or your page?
I was, for instance, I create events in my page, and then
okay.
I let people in my profile know that I'm going to that event, that I'm looking forward to speaking with Amy Porterfield today, and so on.
Gotcha. You know, one of the challenges with Facebook is definitely targeting and making sure that your message is going to land in the news feed of those that genuinely care. And what I always say is that I pretty much only use my page on Facebook. I have a profile, and once in a while I'll post there, but really I spend most of my time on my page. The reason being is that I can target it more and make sure my messages get to the right people. So if someone has become a fan of my Facebook page and I post about my latest podcast, if they are offended or frustrated by that, then they probably shouldn't be a fan of my Facebook page. It's kind of like email marketing. If someone unsubscribes, well, good for them, because they're not the right fit for your products or services anyway. So that's why I use my page more, because I feel that I can talk about anything that, you know, I'm doing in my business, because they liked my Facebook page and said they want to hear from me. Also, I use Facebook ads a lot, so I can really target at a more laser-focused level with my messages, so I don't get a lot of people saying, why are you marketing to me? I'm not a fan, or whatever. But what happens with your challenge is that it's hard to segment when it comes to your profile. People can be your friend on your profile, but I guess that doesn't necessarily mean they want to hear about anything you're doing in your business. So that's why I tend to be the voice on Facebook for my brand and on my page more than anything else. Does that make sense at all?
Oh, it makes tremendous sense, and I really appreciate your talking that through. It what it speaks to is that on different platforms, you really have to figure out who's there and why they're there. And we'll just stick with Facebook, which is that a lot of people connect there for social purposes, and it's worth the time and the effort to figure out, so what are the tools and devices on Facebook in order to get the message to the people that you want it to go to, and to not annoy the people who want to show pictures of their lunch today.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you find more of those on their profile than you will on your Facebook page, for sure.
Yeah. So true. So true. So, you know, you and I are talking a tremendous amount about the whys and the whats, and I want people to know that you have this amazing program that you've put together called Facebook Influence. And if people want, you and I are now going to talk about it, because I so want people to understand the way you as an entrepreneur thought about how to serve your audience. And if people want to dive deep into it, they can go to bbdnow.com/Amy and find out truly all the details about it. But I have to tell you, I'm a raving fan of that program. And one of the reasons is because as you looked about how to shape it, one of the things that you did was create a members program that you refresh the content, so that what it's become is, for me, it's a resource where I can go there and say, how is such and such working now on Facebook? Because on the Facebook side, I'm so aggravated every time they change something, but they don't put a cute little bubble that says, oh, you're looking for this, it doesn't exist anymore, go there.
Yeah, for sure. That would be wonderful.
So how did Facebook Influence come about?
So Facebook Influence came about because I knew that there was a need for an A to Z type Facebook marketing program. There's so many people that they want to know what's working, and they want to ignore all the other chatter out there, because there's a million strategies you can try on Facebook, but there's not a million strategies that actually work. So what I thought I would do is create a program. It's a video training program that you can see my screen and see what I'm doing, and walk people through some of the most important strategies that they really need to know to grow a business. And because my favorite part of what I do in my business is teaching, I knew it was going to be something I would love to do as well, because I got to take people behind the scenes with me to show them what I do to grow my business and what I teach my students as well.
It's very cool, and I will be clear about this. Every time you announce that you've got your next webinar, I sign up for it, because for me, it's exactly where I go to say, what's the latest that's working, you know?
That's so great. Thank you.
You are my number one resource, and I then, you know, re-notify everybody on my list, whatever platform I'm on, because I so want you as an entrepreneur, as an expert at this, to be really clearly known for, I feel such a passion for the approach you're taking to being that resource for people. I just have tremendous admiration for you for doing it. And by the way, you're modeling it for other people in whatever their businesses are. So.
And I appreciate you saying that, because I think that's another thing I love to do, is when it works for me, I love to show how it works so that other people building online businesses can model that. So it's definitely part of my training, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things I adopted in my own programs and workshops is, in the members area, you know, we all enjoy doing Q&A sessions. And what I found from my own personal experience was, I want to be able to listen to an entire Q&A session, but I also want to say, did anybody ask this, and go find that answer. So what I've started doing in my own membership areas is taking and segmenting the Q&A and putting it by topic area, so people can say, you know, what are the questions or the answers that have been on that topic? I want to go dive deep over there. So, and part of it came out of watching what you were doing with this whole idea of, where do I put information so that people can find it current and refreshed? So,
yes, definitely.
It's really great. So what are the sorts of things that you think people should be paying attention to right here, right now? And I know a lot of what we're talking about is from the frame of reference of the solopreneur who has to do it all themselves. But, you know, if we expand it out to people who are being the leader of their business and have teams behind them, then are there best practices they should be taking on now for social media or Facebook and so on?
Definitely. You know, my expertise obviously is Facebook, but I think a lot of things I teach with Facebook marketing can be used across all platforms in general. I think one of the things that's working right now, and it's extremely important to remember, is that when you're posting on Facebook, I always say, I usually use the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, try to make it value add, give shout outs to other content creators that have great articles out there, use quotes, use images, and then 20% of the time, tell people how they can do business with you, you know, either promote your programs, products, or services. So once you got that 80-20 rule down, and that's a loose rule for sure, but you got to be careful with too much promoting or selling on any social site in general. But once you've got that down, really what you want to focus on is making sure you're including calls to action in your post. So what I always say is look over the last 10 posts on, let's say, Facebook or even Google Plus or wherever you spend your time, but look over your last 10 posts. And look to see if you've included subtle calls to action in those posts or blatant call to action. It really doesn't matter. But what I mean by that is click like if you like this quote or share this post with one person you think would find it very valuable or leave a comment below and let me know what you think or click this link to learn more. Really subtle calls to action are crucial in order to get engagement on any social media site, especially though on Facebook. If you're not asking people to do something, I can promise you they're not doing it. And without likes and shares and comments on Facebook, you are not going to get out into the news feed of your fans. So that's why it's so important to make sure that you're including calls to action. Another thing is images. Images are so valuable right now. So what I've started to do is I'll find a great image, but then I like to include maybe some text over that image. So let's say I find an image on a free image site. So I've got this image. Then I use PicMonkey, PicMonkey, PicMonkey.com, and I load up that image in PicMonkey. It's free. And then I include a little text over it. So I do this because text with graphics in the newsfeed on Facebook will grab attention. And I use just a little text, like yes or no in the image. I use those words, yes or no. And then my status update might say yes or no. Google Plus is crucial to my marketing success. And then people start a conversation all around, is Google Plus really viable for their business? So really simple to answer questions and using images to make the point on Facebook or any social site is working right now, and it's really valuable as well.
That's so cool. And just to clarify for people, so if people are starting that conversation by posting that in their page, how does that become part of the stream?
So if they're posting something on their Facebook page, anything you post on your Facebook page will automatically get out into the news feeds of your fans that are active with you. So if you have fans that are liking, commenting, sharing your posts, then Facebook, every time you post on your Facebook page, Facebook will push that post out into those fans' news feed. So that's how it works. It's automatic.
Cool. I think what's part of what's happened is because there's so much confusion and there's no little instruction book that just exists, you know, off to the side of Facebook, is that people who are trying desperately to create a momentum are flinging their information everywhere. You know, they're putting it in their pages, they're putting it in their profile comments, they're commenting in other people's conversations, you know, and in a sense, it's kind of like opening a feather pillow and scattering it to the wind and going, there, I'm out there. You know?
Exactly. And there's no real strategy behind it.
Right. No real strategy and a sense, unfortunately, of coming from a sense of desperation to try and get it all right within the first 3 days instead of recognizing that, no, it's actually relationship building. You know, Gina has this amazing diagram that she shares with students about, you know, relationship building as the dating process, you know, in dating and in business and communication through any of these media is the same thing. It's you actually have to be building a relationship with people, you know, not
yes.
just flinging yourself out there. So, you know, we have to teach. We have to have the patience pill that we hand to people when they're starting to go and design a strategy and then go out and actually live it and work it to build their business.
It doesn't happen overnight. That's so true. Something just to really remember with social media is it takes time and consistency. I always say consistency is going to beat out any of your competitors. If you're showing up daily, posting great content, building those relationships, listening, responding, that's what's going to get you the big ROI with social media marketing, but it doesn't happen overnight.
And you just talked about time literally in the sense of how much time per day. Are there any rules of thumb at the moment for it's very unrealistic. I've had people over the years say, "Oh, just spend 5 minutes." Well, that's nonsense. You cannot accomplish anything in just 5 minutes, and nor can you only stick to 5 minutes, especially
right.
your news feed and you're commenting and participating in conversation. So whether it's you or whether it's team members that are participating in the conversation on behalf of the business, are there any standards or rules of thumb at the moment?
You know, for me, what I always say is, you know, if you could do 15, 20 minutes a day a few times a day, that probably is most valuable, meaning if you hop on just once a day, you're going to miss some pretty valuable conversations, and you need to post a little bit more than just once a day. So in the morning, I might spend 15, 20 minutes, and then late afternoon. I don't spend a lot of time on my social sites. I just make sure I show up daily and I'm consistent. But again, I agree, 5 minutes a day is not enough, definitely, but less than an hour a day is very doable.
And to put it in context for our listeners, if what you're doing is creating curated content, then the lion's share of your time and effort is actually not while you're on Facebook or LinkedIn or Google+. It's out looking for information, crafting the information and the messages that are really going to serve your people, and then it's the time to connect and deliver and respond when you're actually on a Facebook or a Google+. Or Twitter or LinkedIn.
Right, definitely. Yeah. It's that quality time you put into it.
Cool. So what are you working on these days?
These days I'm working more and more on my podcast, so Online Marketing Made Easy podcast, and that's where I get to talk about Facebook, but also a lot of other topics like email marketing and getting leads from social media and really understanding the other social media platforms as well. So that's been a lot of fun for sure. And then in the fall, in September, we will start to market my quarterly program again, Facebook Marketing Profit Lab, where I do more one-on-one group coaching so that people answered and they get a little extra attention. So that's always fun as well. Thanks for asking, though.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm delighted to. And I just encourage everybody who's been listening to this to go to bbdnow.com/Amy and go take a look at Facebook influence, because, you know, there's so much noise and there's so much confusion out there, and you have so simplified and systematize how to figure out what to pay attention to and literally the how-to step-by-step ways of doing it with Facebook that, you know, in this age of total information chaos, it's such a relief. I love it. So Gina, if the birds aren't squawking their heads off, Gina, by the way, lives in an amazing place in Florida, right on the water. And every once in a while on the railings of her house, she has this whole family of very loudmouthed birds that come and join in. So
I have several families of very loudmouthed birds, is more like it.
Oh, wow.
I have a family of baby woodpeckers that just hatched earlier in the week. I have a family of Muscovy ducks that just hatched 8 little baby ducklings a week and a half ago.
Okay, so you should be putting pictures of those up on social media.
I really
yeah,
should.
Fun.
There actually are some already up there.
Too funny.
Well, Amy, this has been fantastic. I can't thank you enough. One other question I know my students are likely to ask is, they do get overwhelmed easily with social media and the time-consumingness of it. As I know you know, you can't build relationships quickly, and it's no different in social media. Do you have a recommended, what I might call, economy of action? So how do they not get lost to having to spend hours a day on social media?
Yeah, I do, and that is to get really specific on your goals. So for me, for Facebook especially, my goals are to engage with my community, build my email list, and let my audience know what I've been working on. And so that means that 15, 20 minutes a few times a day, I'm jumping on and really staying clear to my goals. Now, a lot of people, when they get on social media, they find themselves, and I've done it before, clicking on this picture, watching this video, doing, you know, clicking on a million things and getting completely sucked in. So what I always say is, if that's you, then tell yourself you get 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever works for you, a day, just to be click happy and enjoy Facebook for what it is, in the sense of networking, talking to your friends, doing whatever. But assign time to enjoy it that way. And then any other time you're jumping on Facebook, you're doing it with your business goals in mind. Separating the fun.
Oh, what a great idea.
And the business. Yeah, just allowing yourself that will really help you streamline the time you spend on Facebook.
Really, really great idea.
Excellent. Focused mind, focused attention. That is great.
Yeah.
Great. I have to tell you,
you know,
that
Linda, we've got to introduce Amy to Sarah Hill, who
Absolutely.
Was our guest last week. Oh, my goodness. Sarah does a lot with Google+. She has 2.7 million people following her on Google+.
Wow.
And she calls herself a human media expert. She's using Google Glass combined with Google Plus Hangouts to take vets on virtual tours of World War II memorials all over the world.
Oh, my God.
I know she really should be using Facebook more than she does. The two of you have got to connect. Linda, make it happen.
I absolutely am going to.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, the two of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the two of you would rejoice in how you both are so much about relationship building and thoroughly enjoy each other from that perspective, let alone the synergies between what the two of you are doing. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. So with technology working as it does now, Amy, how much of your time is spent sitting in your entrepreneurial home office versus speaking from stages and so on?
You know, I really try to keep the speaking to a minimum. I really love to be home and not on the road. When I work with Tony, I was on the road so much that I definitely got my share of that. So I probably speak every other month maybe, and then the rest of the time I get to be at my home office, which is really where I love to be.
Isn't technology amazing?
It really is. It really is.
Who knew this?
Gotta love it.
Yeah, this is going to be the amazing business model future for all of us. Really quite remarkable.
I feel lucky.
We truly are. How much of your time is spent working with larger corporations, helping them refine what they're doing nowadays?
You know, in the early days when I left Tony Robbins, I did a lot of that. And then I decided to change my business model, and I only do online programs now. So I create these online programs, and like I mentioned, I do the Profit Lab every quarter, where it's a little bit more one-on-one and people get access to me personally to get their questions answered. But I don't do any consulting, any big business type consulting or coaching anymore, and it just works best for me. So it's kind of a different business model, but it works.
No, and I love it because we have so many people from so many different industries and professions and types of business who are steady, regular listeners to this show. And I love being able to have our guests model what's available now, because not only are we listening to each other through technology, but what technology is enabling each of us to think in very fresh ways. You know, the folks who are in the Breakthrough Academy, one of the things I do with them is really take them into a fresh look about their profit model. And technology, exactly like we're talking about, is really transforming how we can create really lucrative businesses where we create the business we want, the life we want, and the freedom we want in very lucrative ways. So if you don't mind, I love digging into, so how are you loving this business model, you know?
Loving every minute of it. The business model that I've created for myself now over like the last year has been everything I wanted and beyond that. So I'm a little bit more of an introvert, so I enjoy my time alone and creating content and putting together these programs, and I love the marketing, online marketing strategies that I get to create. So it truly is become my dream job. It didn't start that way. It was a little rough in the beginning getting my legs, you know, as an entrepreneur, but it's now finally exactly what I want it to be.
Fabulous. I'm so glad you were able to come spend time with us today, and I'm encouraging everybody, go to bbdnow.com/Amy, go find out about Facebook Influence, find out how it can be completely relevant for what you're trying to do to build relationships with your community, your tribe, your ideal customers, and report back.
Definitely let us know.
Yeah. I thank you again, Amy, so much for the time that you spent with us today. And Gina, do you have any closings that you'd like to bring along with the birds? Gina's on mute. Amy, thank you.
Sorry. I am really looking forward to having our listeners go check out Facebook Influence. Thank you so much, Amy, for being here. And Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, Linda.
Thanks. Thanks, Amy. Bye, all.
Bye, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.